Excuse me, everyone. I hate to interrupt your lunch, and I hope you've been enjoying the Dallas attempt at Peruvian food. I invite you to go to Peru and have the real thing, which is significantly better, although this is quite good. my name is Mark Gunn, and I work for Hunt Oil Company. And I had to bring notes because our guest of honor's career has been so distinguished that there's no way I could remember everything he's accomplished without them. Ambassador Carlos Pareja, his diplomatic roots run deep. His father served as the Peruvian ambassador to Denmark and Costa Rica. And his entry into Foreign Service in 1984 as the political counselor to the Embassy of Peru in Washington, D.C. He returned to Washington in 2016 to begin his tenure as Peru's ambassador to the United States. He told us earlier today that he had the honor of being the last ambassador to present his credentials to President Obama in the previous administration. His Excellency served as Peru's top representative to Spain, Switzerland, and spent many years in Chile, a very, of course, important relationship and during a very important time in the relationship between those two countries. He's also served as the Chief of State Protocol and as the Director General for the Directorate General of Africa, Middle East, and Gulf Countries. In 2008, Ambassador Pareja was honored with the Order of Merit of the Diplomatic Service of Peru, which was named after José Gregorio Paz Saldón, acknowledging his contributions to the fields of diplomatic service and foreign policy. He continues to be recognized for his work, earning Peru's highest civilian honor, the Order of the Sun. Recently, the ambassador has worked with the United States government to extend and expand the Memorandum of Understanding between our two countries, which formalizes bilateral efforts to stop trafficking of Peruvian artifacts into the United States. Here to discuss the strategic alliance between Peru and the United States in the 21st century, please join me in giving a warm welcome to His Excellency Carlos Pareja.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you very much. That was I'm really flattered by the presentation, and I had a very good meeting this morning at with James Spagnol and all the people from the Dallas Chamber, and then I went to Hunt Company. We had a very, very nice meeting as well, and this is my third call this morning, and I feel very much at home, not only because I've been received warmly in, I'm not referring to the climate, warmly in Dallas, but also because now we had, you know, the ceviche and then this ají de gallina, very well prepared, so my congratulations to the chef, and the blueberries. I'm sure they're Peruvian because they're big ones. So thanks, Ambassador Gene Phillips, for joining us, and Matthew Rooney from the Bush Center, and Jay Spagnolo again. Very happy to be here with you. I want to briefly mention that Peru has a rich cultural history. From the pre-Inca cultures, we by the way, yesterday we were at the Museum of Dallas, and they had a wonderful collection of Peruvian pottery and textiles. From the Peru-Inca cultures and civilizations that settled along the Peruvian coast and highlands that stood out for their ritual pottery made of clay, silver, and gold, their ability to adapt and superb management of their natural resources. Then came the Inca Empire, known as the Tahuantinsuyo, that spanned through the roadway system called the Capañán or the Inca Trail. Maybe some of you have done that. The distance of northern Ecuador to central Chile and consisted of approximately 12 million inhabitants. Later, after the Spanish conquest of the 16th century, it was established a viceroyalty. It had its headquarters in Lima and had jurisdiction all over South America except the Portuguese colony of Brazil. Peru was considered the most valuable Spanish possession in the Americas. It produced vast quantities of silver bullion for shipment to Europe, especially from mines in Potosí. You know, in south of the United States, there were two great civilizations and empires, the Maya and Azteca, or Azteca after that, and then the Peruvian, and both were viceroyalties of Spain. The viceroyalty of Peru was dissolved as much of the Spanish Empire when challenged by national independence movements at the beginning of the 19th century. General San Martin occupied Lima on July 21 of 1821, and the independence of Peru was proclaimed on July 28th, consolidated after the Battle of Ayacucho in 1824. So now we are in the process of celebrating our independence bicentenary, which at the same time granted the freedom in whole South America. We are working also with the United States so that celebration will also be joined by the United States. Peru, a key player in Latin America. If we look to Latin America nowadays, we can say in general terms that, with some exceptions, it has benefited greatly in recent years from democratic opening, stable economic policies, and increasing growth. Definitely, Latin America looks much different today than a couple of decades ago. Democracy across Latin America has flourished, and that is real. It's broadly accepted as the underlying principle organizing hemispheric engagement. You can clearly sense it from the overwhelming and increasing pressure recently put regarding to the current crisis in Venezuela for almost all Latin American countries. And Peru has a leadership on this. We have a leadership on this because we believe in democracy. And President Kuczynski, since he was a candidate, he proclaimed that he was in favor of democracy in Venezuela. We are pushing very hard to open that country. And not only because of democratic principles, but also because of humanitarian reasons, because we believe that the people of Venezuela are having a very bad time, and that is very unjust. Social indicators, according to the World Bank, have demonstrated better results regarding poverty reduction, the increase of gross domestic product per capita, the rise of the expectation of life at birth, and the number of people that are now becoming part of the middle class, as well as reduced infant malnutrition rates. However, there are still challenges through the region, like the strengthening of weak state institutions, the fight against corruption, especially nowadays. We were talking this morning at the North Chamber, also at the Hunt, this problem of corruption in Latin America, and that is why we are having in Peru the Summit of the Americas that it takes part every 3 years all of the presidents of the region, including the United States, of course, will be in Peru. President Trump, I think, will join us, and the theme will be corruption and governance, but in a positive sense. In addition to these challenges, Latin America will face electoral processes within the near future. Countries like Brazil, Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela, Chile, Costa Rica, Paraguay, and Honduras will hold presidential elections over the next 2 years. In the case of Ecuador, President Moreno has just assumed post recently. The challenges and situations described are of direct concern of the United States, not only because of its geographical proximity to Latin America, but also because at the end of the day, they could affect the stability in the whole region and put at risk the interests of the United States. In this regard, we should have in mind, especially in foreign policy, that the movement of each piece has an impact on the chessboard. With this scenario, you may be pondering about the specific role that Peru plays in Latin America. First of all, we can mention that the sum of many factors like economic modernization, resources, abundance, and continued improvement in economic governance and political stability are helping Peru to emerge as one of the most stable and influential countries in Latin America. With regard to we have 5 neighbors in Peru, starting in the north, Ecuador, Colombia, Brazil, Bolivia, and Chile. And we have finalized all our frontier problems with our neighbors in the last 15 years. In the case of Ecuador, we signed the peace treaty in 1996. In the case of Chile, the final binding judgment rendered by the International Court of Justice in 2014 put an end to the maritime controversy between both countries. I think we have a very, very good relationship with all countries, all our neighbor countries, and that is very important in order to facilitate the improvement of the country, to spend less in defense, and to smoothen the relationship in the frontier provinces. No, we have a really fantastic relation with the Ecuadorians in the frontier, and now with the Chileans, we have what we call cabinet meetings, bilateral cabinet meetings. We started with Ecuador after we finished the problems. Then we continued with Colombia, last year with Bolivia, and this year on July 7th, my birthday, we're having this cabinet with Chile. In the global scenario, Peru is very active. We are very active in what is called the Alianza del Pacifico, Pacific Alliance. Members are Mexico, Chile, Colombia, and Peru. You know, and we're very active. Today I think we're holding a meeting in Cali, Colombia. We are also very active at the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation, APEC. Very active. We've hosted two meetings. The first one, President Bush was there in 2008, and last year President Obama went to Peru, where he was cheered incredibly. He went to a private university, and all the students cheered him, took selfies, and it was a big event. I think he sort of covered all the media with that. And we're very active at the OAS, especially now with trying to handle things in Venezuela. We're also very active at the UNASUR, and now we have just been elected members for the National Security Council from 2018 to 2020. So that is we are very, very strong in the international arena. The Pacific Alliance is a very ambitious platform that also deals with the facilitation of free movement of people under the visa waiver program and an integrated migration system. The Pacific Alliance has 49 observers between them, the United States, and now it has opened, and we will have associated countries that it's going to start working next year. On Venezuela, again, regarding the ongoing situation, the position of the Peruvian government has been clear and sound. In this sense, without pretending to interfere in the internal issues of fellow country, and that is very delicate because when you trespass that, it's very fine, but still, the current situation in Venezuela constitutes an alteration of the democratic and constitutional order, which precisely goes against the principles that we are very we support very much, like democracy, separation of powers, and free press. The strategic partnership between Peru and the United States. Relations between Peru and the United States started in 1827. That's when we established diplomatic relations. Remember that we got our independence in 1824, so that was almost immediately after that. With ups and downs, as any relation goes, most importantly, both countries, Peru and the United States, share fundamental values and principles such as freedom, democracy, respect for human rights, belief in open markets, rule of law, and we have, I can say, a very stable relationship. In this regard, we should have in mind that in 2013, in a joint presidential statement, Peru and the United States recognized that they are working to consolidate a strategic partnership for the 21st century that would further enhance security, prosperity, and development in the hemisphere. Correspondingly, the strategic multi-annual plan of the Peru Ministry of Foreign Affairs for 2015-2021 reiterates this goal and specifies that this will allow to continue improvements in security, prosperity, social inclusion, education, and development in the region. In February 27, President Kuczynski was the first Latin American president to meet President Trump after he assumed office at the White House. During this meeting of 45 minutes, they discussed ways to deepen the close collaboration between the United States and Peru. On his remarks to the press, President Trump mentioned that Peru has been a fantastic neighbor and we've had a great relationship. During the following month, President Kuczynski and President Trump have given continuity to this dialogue by having regular, they have about four or five phone calls in order to discuss different issues and follow up the different topics of the bilateral agenda, including regional issues. I was, of course, in the first meeting of President Trump and President Kuczynski, and what President Kuczynski tried to have of that meeting was to create confidence. You know, he stated that Latin America and especially Peru, we are natural partners of the United States. We really have hardly any controversies. We don't. There's no threat to the security of the United States. We all have. Commerce and all kinds of interaction between the two countries. And in the case of Peru, well, there's a big surplus from the United States, so we have no threat to our trade agreement, fortunately. And really, President Trump was very comprehensive, and he asked many questions, and they got along fine, and that relationship has continued by phone and in the last month, even when we had these terrible floods in February, all the north coast of Peru was destroyed by all these continuing rain, and President Trump called, and then he sent two Hercules planes and sent a lot of aid and people to help us. So we are very grateful for that. Moreover, I think that has strengthened the relationship and build a trust and partnership, which is what we want. I think that that has been good also for the United States because you have created more proximity to Latin America and Peru, of course. We have a congressional caucus on Peru that was launched in the House of Representatives, and we are honored to have Representative Henry Cuellar from Texas as one of its members. This very important forum gives us the chance to exchange views and information about Peru in the United States Congress. We will have them all over for dinner in July, which is a month that is not so hard for work in Congress. It is also important to mention that the collaboration between Peru and the United States does not finish at the bilateral level. In this regard, Peru supports many initiatives of the United States at the multilateral level, such as open government partnership on the Equal Future Partnership, and coordinates on numerous issues of mutual concern through international organizations. A strategic association has to be built under a relation that is anchored in respect, dialogue, consultations, and cooperation. Trust. Yes, trust for this whole process is a key element in order to avoid uncertainty, and as we have seen, Peru and the United States are working in the right direction to consolidate this partnership. We were talking about how important trust is. We were talking this morning with James Spagnoli and the people that... about how important trust is, not only for the political aspects, but also for economy, for commerce, for investment. No? So that is one of my my tasks in the United States. About trade and foreign investment, the economic and commercial ties between Peru and the United States have deepened strongly with the trade promotion agreement, the TPA, which entered into force in 2009. And trade in both directions has grown and achieved a sum of $14 billion in 2015. According to USTR reports, in 2015, Peru was the 35th largest trade partner of the United States, with a surplus in favor of the United States of $3 billion. The impact of the TPA is broader than economic and trade aspect. You know, it has been very helpful in order to strengthen in Peru the state institutions, to promote higher standards of protection in very sensitive areas as labor, environment protection, illegal mining, and transparency. It has been a threshold for the negotiation of other trade agreements with other countries and regional organizations, as well as to prepare the basis for the access of Peru to the OECD, an aspiration that we hope to achieve in the near future. We have a meet, they have a meeting in Paris on the July the 12th that is very important, so we're working very hard on that. Foreign investment in Peru. Peru has established clear and friendly rules regarding foreign investment, and I was very glad to hear from the Hunt people that I saw this morning that they are very confident in Peru's institutions and in Peru's and how business is going in Peru, so thanks for that. We have friendly rules regarding foreign investment, which assures the exact same non-discriminatory treatment to both national and foreign investors. The application of the most favorable nation clause treatment, the free sending of remittances abroad for the profits or gains, and the guarantee to freely process and use of foreign currency among other incentive measures. In addition, we are having a growth this year of 2.7% or maybe 3%. That is not so high for Peru. We had a growth, a sustainable growth for almost 25 years now, which has changed the country. You that have been going to Peru, the people from Hunt, and for several years, you have noticed the improvement and how the middle class has grown in Peru. And you know that is very important in our countries for the middle class to grow and to be strong, because those are the people that will maintain the system. And when we have elections, elect the correct people. Now that populace is so. Growing in the region or in other places, we have to maintain this growth and maintain this stability, and for that a strong middle class is very important. In this environment, numerous investment projects have been announced by the Peruvian government. The Private Investment Promotion Agency in Peru, Proinversión, has presented a new portfolio of high-potential projects to be awarded between 2017 and 18. This portfolio of investments comprises 32 public-private partnerships, PPP it's called, projects and asset projects for an amount of more than $14 billion. If we review the 2016 flow of foreign investment in Peru coming from the United States, we will notice that it rises to an average of 13% of its total. No, and we have investments, the U.S. investments in Peru in petroleum, industry, mining, energy, and tourism. Also in transportation and in construction. And when I went to goodbye to President Kuczynski in early September before I came to the United States, he told me to have as task to promote more investment in petroleum, mining, tourism, and infrastructure. So all of you have to help me in that. As you can appreciate, there is plenty space to explore potential new investments coming from the United States, and if any of you are interested in the current projects launched by Pro Inversión, the Peruvian Embassy, we have with us a person from the commercial office in Florida with us. We will be happy to provide information about that. Migration policy. You know, we have about 800,000 Peruvians in the United States. Maybe it's not 800,000, maybe 900,000. When President Kuczynski went to see President Trump, he told him, you know, we have the Peruvians that work here, and that apply for other countries as well. They come here because they want to have new opportunities. They want to have a nice level of life and give them a better education to their children. So they come here to work, and they benefit also the prosperity of the United States with their creativity and with their the culture that they bring as well. No, so and the strong values. We are very the Peruvians are very religious, and that has I saw that very strongly in Chile, for instance. Our gastronomy, the values, the creativity, and it also applies in the United States. So we are very proud to have these 900,000 Peruvians. Many of them, of course, have become residents, and a lot more have become American citizens. But I think we have no complaints, hardly no complaints about the Peruvian population, and of course they help their families in Peru. But they, I think, they contribute strongly to the prosperity of the United States. And as I was telling the people that I met this morning, one of my tasks is to travel once a month to one state, you know, the states where there's companies that are in Peru, that have business in Peru or that have commerce with Peru, and that is the case of Dallas and Texas. That is why I am very happy to be here with you. So with that, I think that I am finished with my presentation, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I have enjoyed being in Dallas, and I will continue to have this friendship with Dallas and Texas, of course. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador. Great reminder, I think, of the depth and breadth of the relationships that the United States maintains around the world and of the great benefits that we draw from them. We appreciate very much your remarks, and particularly your visit, which I hope you found useful, to North Texas, which we like to think of as the center of the United States. I think it is, isn't it? I'm sure we can find a way to define it such that we're at the center of the United States. The ambassador has agreed to take a few questions, and so yes, sir.
Questions, having visited Peru. Number one, may non-Peruvian citizens own property in Peru? And number two, I understand there is a law in Peru that all adult citizens of Peru must vote, or there are certain consequences should they choose not to vote. Would you comment on that,
yes,
please?
No limitation on for foreigners to own property in Peru, except within 50 kilometers of the frontier of all the country. But rest, you can invest in own property. You can own homes. You can own business. Whatever. There's no, and as I said, there's no restriction for the cash flow in and out of Peru. And in the case of vote, yes, in Peru, the vote is obligatory. You must vote. If you don't go to vote for the presidential elections, you must pay a fine that is not so high. It's about $20. But I think that that has made people to everybody enjoys voting, and even you have to vote until you're 70 years old, and then you can stop voting. But people live in 80, 90. Go and vote, because I think people are very involved in what in what happens in politics. No, we so for us, for instance, it's quite strange to see that in other countries people don't go voting. No, young people vote a lot in Peru, so it is obligatory. Yes, but people I think feel that they should comply with this obligatory vote.
I wish we could recover that joy in voting, but. I'm sorry, I saw Bud first. Do you mind, Paco, just?
Please.
Real quickly. What has been the reaction in Peru to America's refusal to endorse the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
Well, I think the Trans-Pacific Partnership was a treaty that was worked very, very hardly and by all the member countries. And as a region, we were not happy with that decision. Again, you know, that was negotiated under another government in Peru before Mr. Kuczynski came in. But Mr. Kuczynski is not that unhappy about the decision, because he thought that China should be in that partnership. He thought that China should not have been excluded. And not only because China is one of our most important partners in commerce, but he President Kuczynski thinks that the importance of China is such that it should be involved in a Trans-Pacific in that Trans-Pacific issue. I think if there's any future negotiations, we will be involved as well.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Consul General. Please.
Thank you, Matt. Mexico is a country of multiple belongings. We are, with the NAFTA, very competitive region, and our heart beats to the south, too. I would like to know how important is Alianza del Pacifico in the foreign policy of Peru. Thank you.
It is most important. For this initiative, Alianza del Pacifico, was an idea of President Alan Garcia, and that was in 2010, I think. I was chief of protocol. I was chief of protocol for Alan Garcia, and we made a very good relationship. And he was all, you know, thinking, what should we do in order to promote free commerce? Because at that time there were difficult times for South America. So he thought, let's put all these four countries together, that we have the same policies, economic and commercial policies, even if we don't identify as ourselves as ideological. And then it started, you know, at first it was called Arco del Pacifico, and then it was transformed into Alianza del Pacifico, and that's how it was created, and I think it's very prosperous, and also, again, now that it's very important to have economic blocks. You know, this is an economic lock that is very potent, and it's very looked with great admirers by other countries. So we are very, very we have a strong compromise with it.
Yes. Seizing the initiative of the chair, if I may, and asking everyone's indulgence, I'd like to ask a follow-on question, if I might. You talked a little bit about the institutional impacts of the bilateral trade relationship with the United States within Peru. We heard you just now talk about the impacts of the Pacific Alliance. You mentioned the TPP. What kinds of programs has your government carried out internally to prepare your private sector, to prepare your workforce to prepare your economy to compete in those trade relationships?
Well, we are preparing ourselves. We have in the Alianza del Pacífico again has helped a lot, you know, because it is a negotiation that is it has not stopped. We still are negotiating all the time in order to coordinate our economic and commercial policies, and we have to compete with countries that are very open, like Chile, a very open country, and now we are also a very open economy, and Colombia is as well. Mexico, well, it has also now is sort of opening much more than it was before. So we are preparing ourselves, and we know that in order to get more investment from abroad, in order to get more possibilities of business, you have to have an open economy, you know? So we have that compromise.
Excellent, thank you. Other questions or from the floor? You've answered every single question that you could possibly have thought of. Thank you very much, sir.
Well. Thank you very much. I was very pleased to be with you this afternoon. But I have one question. What is that tie doing here?
Well, apparently you like it, so that's good. So on behalf of the World Affairs Council, Your Excellency, we would like to present you with the official World Affairs Council tie.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. Well, it helped me with my speech, you know, because I had my papers and the tie was sort of mixing around. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Right. Take my papers.
So with that, everyone, please have a very happy and a prosperous 4th of July weekend, and thank you for being here with the World Affairs Council. Yeah.